Next up is Coluccio versus King County.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court, I'm Brad Powell, representing the appellant, Frank Coluccio Construction Company. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes. This case has taken some very unusual twists and turns to get to this point, beginning with a mediation, formal contract mandated, in the middle of a construction project. During that same mediation, we have a preemptive strike lawsuit initiated by King County in the King County Superior Court. Day two of the mediation, 9 a.m. on December 8th, and King Coluccio's presentation to the mediator and King County immediately followed. Didn't tell us. Sat there and listened to our mediation presentation, having already filed a lawsuit. Didn't tell us till the next morning when the formal mediation part of the, or negotiation part of the mediation was to come out. We filed suit in Snohomish County and tabled a TRO, preventing King County from enforcing the termination letter that it had issued. That suit gets dismissed based on the priority of action rule. We go back down to King County. We file a motion to change venue under RCW 3601050, and the King County Superior Court judge grants our motion. Transfers the case to Snohomish County. A few days later, that order is rescinded. A new judge in King County takes up the matter, considers the motion to transfer venue anew, and denies it this time. Then follows up and certifies that denial for discretionary review, and that brings us here today. What Coluccio is seeking is simply the ability to exercise its rights under RCW 3601050 and have its claim as a public works contractor against a county owner heard in an adjoining county. The first sentence of that statute, subsection 1, clearly provides that right, that a suit against a county may be in one of the two nearest adjoining counties. Snohomish County qualifies here. It is.
What about the second sentence?
The second sentence?
Of subsection 1.
Clearly, that's what the county relies on. It says we filed in the county where the contractor
resides. And is, now, there any, is there any dispute that Coluccio resides in King County?
No. There's no dispute, I think, that any contractor contracting with King County resides in King County. So that's the trap they've set here. Because the resident, the venue statute, when you look at what constitutes residence, includes transacting business.
Your argument is subsection 3 means that King County cannot sue Coluccio in King County.
I don't think it means they cannot sue Coluccio in King County.
Well, what is your argument then?
What it means is that if Coluccio, as a public works contractor, reading that 3601050 together and giving effect to all parts, if it elects to commence an action, an initial action or by way of counterclaim, what have you, if it happens to be sued first, is entitled to have that litigation handled in an adjoining county. And I think the legislative intent of subsection 3, which frankly was just enacted 2 years ago in 2015, to address the construction industry's concern that counties were forcing contractors into their home court.
So your position is subsection 3 trumps the language of subsection 1.
Well, I think in this context it does.
Now, what is this context?
That the contractor here, it's a public works case. It is not any party suing a county. It is a public works contractor. And I think that specific venue provision should apply here. Now, that subsection 3 doesn't just apply to express venue provisions. It applies to any provisions in a contract which require litigation in the contractor's home county, thus taking away the right granted by the first section of first sentence of subsection 1, that the plaintiff suing a county is entitled to an adjoining county.
So when the legislature said requires but doesn't say allows or permits, what are we to make of that?
I think you have to look at the entire statute, 050, as a whole, and try and interpret the intent of the legislature. What are they trying to get at? They are trying to get at the right of a public works contractor to have its case heard in an adjoining county and not let counties, through contract clauses, prevent them from exercising that right.
What provision in this public works contract requires the lawsuit to be filed in King County?
The effect of it is that Coluccio or any public works contractor can, in this case, could not file suit until conditions preceding happen. One, a mediation has to have been completed, and second, they have to receive completion documents on the project from the county. Well, the county controls both of those. That's a one-sided provision. The county is not subject to those provisions. So the county is then entitled to do exactly what they did here, which is file a preemptive suit. And that requires then the way the King County Court applied the priority of action rule, which I'll address, to have the case tried in King County. Now, the priority of action rule under the American Mobile Homes case is not an absolute. It is not a bright-line rule. Equitable factors have to be considered. Interest of justice have to be considered. The race to the courthouse, which wasn't a race here because Coluccio never had the benefit of a starting gun for itself, and the interest of justice, frankly, is the public policy established by the legislature in subsection 3 of the 3601050. When you consider those factors, the Snohomish County action never should have been dismissed on the basis of the priority of action rule. Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Jill Bowman. I'm here on behalf of the respondent, King County. Seated with me at council table is Mr. Scott Pritchard. Your Honors, both of the trial court rulings in this matter present straightforward issues, and in both cases, the trial courts got it right. For the King County case, the question is whether the county brought its suit in a proper, in an improper venue.
So you don't challenge the court's determination that the subsection of the contract that required suit shall be filed in King County is void?
Correct, Your Honor. We did not, when we filed suit, we did not rely on that provision in the contract at all. We cited the statute, RCW 3601-0501. We did not rely on Section 9.2.
So you don't challenge the court's decision that that provision of the contract that requires filing in King County is void and unenforceable under
Section
9.3.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. Yes, correct. Section 9.2C, we agree, is void and unenforceable. But that doesn't mean that the remainder of Section 9.2 is void and unenforceable. It's only 9.2C, which was basically a forum selection clause. But that is why the county, when it filed suit, put in its complaint that it was stating venue or pursuing venue under 3601-0501. 3601-0501 requires a county to bring suit in the county where the defendant resides or in one of the two nearest judicial districts. Coluccio resides in King County, as Your Honor pointed out, so the venue is proper.
The argument is that the other provisions of 9.2 read as condition precedents would require us to look at subsection 3.
Your Honor, there is a condition precedent. It's a litigation timing provision. It has nothing to do with where a suit has to be filed. It doesn't require that a suit be filed in King County or in any specific court. Besides which, to tell the truth, the attack on Section 9.2 is kind of a sideshow. It's the remain other than 9.2C, the remainder of the contract provision has nothing, says nothing about requiring an action to be filed in King County. And I think
they're simply looking at the condition precedents to say those also are void and unenforceable.
You know, I would actually encourage you to look at pages 6 to 7 of the reply brief, where they basically concede that the litigation timing provisions in Section 9.2 don't matter. The reason I say that is because they argue there that once a county files suit, preemptively or not, the contractor should have a venue veto right. So in other words, whenever a county files first, the contractor gets to elect between accepting or overriding the county's venue choice. It makes irrelevant their whole argument about Section 9.2. Of course, they don't have a venue veto right. It's not in the statute, but that is their argument. And it basically, it undoes their whole argument based on Section 9.2. With respect to the remainder of that, I'm going to say that I would point out that subsection 1 and subsection 3 are plain and unambiguous. Subsection 1 is a statutory venue provision.
Did the legislature engage in a useless act when it enacted that which is now subsection 3?
Oh, no, Your Honor, not at all.
Well, the council says part of where you reside is where you do business. If you're contracting with a county, you're always going to be doing business in that county. And so this really, this was an enactment that accomplished nothing and can't accomplish anything because it doesn't really matter whether it's in the contract because there's a statute that allows the county to file wherever the business is being done, and it's always going to be in that county. So as long as they can guarantee in the contract that the county can file first, then the legislature has engaged in a useless act.
No, Your Honor, I don't think that's the case at all. I mean, first of all, what they did with subsection 3 is they were looking at protecting contractors who wanted to file suit and were bound by forum selection clauses in the contracts. This takes away binding contractors to forum selection clauses. So if a contractor files suit and there's a section 9.2C in the contract, that's no longer enforceable. They can then choose, if they file suit first, they can choose to file in either the county or that the county's operating in or one of the two adjacent districts. So it's not immaterial or I've forgotten your
Yeah, but as long as the contract has these provisions that require mediation, they can never sue before mediation. And that always means that any county, any of the 39 counties, can do exactly what happened here and file suit within the county that they are, because that's necessarily where the work's being done. And so it totally takes away this goal that the legislature was trying to achieve by enacting subsection 3.
I don't think it does, Your Honor. I think if you're looking at section 9.2, the only way you would have to say that in order not to enforce section 9.2, apart from 9.2C, you would have to say that it's substantively unconscionable. Otherwise, it is a term that is enforceable. I don't think you can get to it being substantively unconscionable.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm you're missing my point. My point is back to statutory construction.
Right.
My point is not contract construction. You're talking about contract construction.
Okay.
I'm talking about statutory construction. One of the tenants, we've got two competing tenants here. One is plain language. You're arguing plain language.
Yes, Your Honor.
But another competing tenant is we never assumed that the legislature set about to do nothing. When they do something, we assume that they meant it to have some effect. And I'm postulating that within in a situation with this contract, which is allowable, that your construction of the statute means that the legislature engaged in a useless act.
I don't agree with that, Your Honor. I think what the legislature did with subsection 3 is to void certain contract form provisions. It did not touch the statutory venue provisions in subsection 1. It could have, but it didn't. And I don't think you can read a contract form provision change to override a statutory venue provision. They are entirely separate. And as the U.S. Supreme Court pointed out in the Atlantic Marine case, there's a difference between statutory venue provisions and contract form provisions, and subsection 3 deals with contract form provisions. I don't think it doesn't render anything useless. It makes it so that they are not bound by contract form provisions, and that's as far as they went.
On the priority of action rule, do we reach the equitable factors or consider the equitable factors?
I don't think you have to, Your Honor. It's pretty clear that the priority of action rule applies when the parties are the same in the two actions, the subject matter is the same, and the relief is the same. And
so does the case law provide, if that's the case, that we don't reach the equitable factors?
I think that's correct, Your Honor.
And what cases are those?
I think that's actually that might be the Atlantic Casualty or case, or it might be Bunch.
Okay.
But even if you get, Your Honor.
Is the priority of action rule grounded in concepts of comity and one court deferring to another court?
Precisely.
Does that open the door to considering other factors instead of who runs the race?
Well, it is grounded in factors of, you know, it's basically based on res judicata and collateral estoppel, yes, Your Honor. It's based on the principles of judicial economy, fairness, and not wanting one court to interfere with the authority of another court with proper jurisdiction. So, yes, that's the doctrinal underpinnings for the rule. Those are substantial public policy underpinnings. And that's why the rule has been in place and gone for so long. Those principles here show that the priority of action rule was properly applied. It was the same parties, the same relief, same subject matter, the compulsory counterclaim matter. This case decided Schaefer versus Retriever Medical Dental just a few months ago and said that when the priority of action rule applies, when the claims asserted in the second filed action are compulsory counterclaims in the first filed action. The compulsory counterclaim that Coluccio filed in King County is verbatim what the company filed in Snohomish County. I don't think there's any question that the Snohomish court properly applied the priority of action rule. This court should affirm that ruling, should affirm the King County's ruling, and should remand it back to King County for resolution of the case on the merits. Thank you, Your Honor.
With respect to the priority of action rule, the identities were not present here. The Coluccio action filed in Snohomish County sought specific injunctive relief. In fact, the TRO hearing was held, and there was a TRO granted, preliminary injunction motion scheduled. None of that injunctive relief was part of the King County action. Now, I don't believe that under the American Mobile Homes case, the equitable consideration, either interest of justice, which would be the public policy established by the legislature, or equitable consideration such as an unfair race to the courthouse, only apply in the absence of identity. I think we don't have identity here, but I think if you read the Supreme Court's decision, that's one case where they'll consider equitable factors, but they will also consider them in other cases. And that decision relies and looks to federal law and the federal law's interpretation of the first filed rule. And I think the Ninth Circuit decision in the Alltrade case, which we cited in our brief, says it very well. The court there said that circumstances under which an exception to the first-to-file rule typically will be made include bad faith, anticipatory suit, and forum shopping. There's no requirement in this first-to-file rule that there be an identity of interest. With respect to the argument regarding 3601050, the first sentence says someone can sue a county in an adjoining county. Second sentence says the county can sue a party in that county's party or that party's county of residence. The third section, which the legislature recently amended, deals specifically with public works contracts. Now, it would have been nice had the legislature, and I think we see this all the time, I do, had thought of every possible outcome and fact pattern when they enact laws. They didn't here. I don't think they intended to leave the discretion or the dichotomy, the conflict set up by the first and second sentences of subsection 1 solely to the priority of action rule. Their legislation in 2015, if you look at the background and their statement of public policy, is clearly remedial in nature. It is to remedy a situation where counties require home court venue. It's remedial. It should be liberally construed. If you liberally construe that statute as a whole, a public works contractor is entitled to the benefit of the first section of subsection 1. So I think both the King County Superior Court decision and Snohomish Court are subject to reversal. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you all. That concludes our session this morning.